When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. My name is Matt Bungard and with me today, Nick Gampton. Hello.
Well, yes, Matthew. How are you today, mate?
Mate, I am phenomenal. A great Easter. We are a day late, but certainly not a buck short. We're coming at you live Tuesday morning because, of course, we had that thriller on Monday afternoon that we will get to in just a minute. But how was your Easter, mate, first of all?
Busy. I worked every day. I worked every day from Thursday till today. So, yeah, it was just on the tools. You know, that's just part of when you cover sport, when you don't have a real job, you know, you got to work a lot of holidays, but that's all right. Like, and there was a big round of footy. There's a lot to take away from it. I feel like most of the teams have played four games now, and I feel like four games is enough to start making big sweeping proclamations about the rest of the season. Like, we have the data, you know, and now we can just like totally shoot from the hip and really get wild with it, which is nice. And there's enough games where you can back up even the most feeble of opinions, which is exciting for us.
That's some impressive work, either, mate. Even Jesus got a couple of days off in Easter, so good for you. All the way through.
I know.
Three days of rest for Nick Camp.
What can I say, man? JC was up on those bars being the man, you know, and I was just slaving away as I do.
Looking up metaphorically at your boy, thinking, you know, if he can do it, I can do it too.
That's right. That's right. I'd like to thank Jesus for helping me live blog all these NRL games.
Terrific stuff. And we're starting, of course, on Good Friday with the traditional game, South Sydney 20, Canterbury 16. The Rabbitohs are finally off the bottom of the ladder, Nicholas.
Are they back?
No, but they won a game.
And talk me through this one, man, because it was really touch and go for a minute there. And if they'd crashed and lost this one to the Dogs, then it's like, then this would probably be a solo pod, you know?
Oh, mate, I've kind of checked out on them mentally for the season, but it's nice to win games. And I was there and it was great to win. And yeah, I think maybe the way the first couple of rounds of the season have gone, have got to them a little bit. They played very within themselves in this game. You can point to their 97% completion rate. And the only error was, of course, Jack White and just dropping the ball for no reason when they were going to score a try.
But God bless him.
We got a full Whiten game in this one, didn't we?
Never change, Jack. Now that it's not going to drive me crazy, I never want him to change.
But I thought they defended well. And I think that given the amount of ball Canterbury had, South did very well to win this game because on another day against another opponent, perhaps all that ball in their territory might have resulted in more points for the opposition, but it didn't in this one. And it's just nice to win a game. Several forwards had their best game of the year. But we've routinely said that the Bulldogs' forward depth, particularly in the middle, is atrocious. So you can't really glean too much from that. And then, of course, they lost Jacob Preston for a quarter of the game as well, who's their best back rower. So, one of their two best back rowers, Bill Kickow, I should say. But
one of their two best starting back rowers. Yeah,
exactly. Top two. Still a high bar. But yeah, it was weird because in the first 20 minutes of this game,
South looked great.
I thought my burger prediction was going to come true. And then they came crashing back to earth and just looked more like the team that we've seen them be in the first 3 weeks of this season. But, you know, credit to them for not letting it get away from them. A scoreless second half defensively, which is something that they should hang their hat on if there is something to hang their hat on here, because, of course, they got absolutely reamed by the Roosters last week. And, oh, sorry, they get that try. What am I saying? They got that try right at the end, but, you know, whatever.
For all intents and purposes, tilt, dog. Yeah, come tighten it
I'm
up.
All over the shop. Yeah, sorry. But I didn't come away from this game with any sort of grandiose expectations towards South. It was more just, you know, well, they played a pretty poor team and they won.
They were kind of at a point where they just had to win any which way they could. And it didn't matter if they had a lie, cheat, beg, borrow, or steal. Just just win, baby. That's all that mattered. I thought they started really well. They're playing really direct through Tom Burgess and Cam Murray, especially. I thought we got a lot more of regular Cam Murray in this game than we have through to the season thus far. I liked that he played slightly fewer minutes. I think it was more around 60, and most of the season it's been around 70, which I liked because I think that frees him up to do a lot more of his attacking stuff. And as good as he is defensively, I think, you know, they need him being that point forward and punching in around the ruck, because like so much of what they do comes off of that. But when Burgess and Murray went off, I felt like that's when the game started to turn towards Canterbury. And we've bagged out their middle forwards plenty through this season, but I thought Kurt Mann, Josh Curran, and Curtis Morin were all really, really strong. Morin had that bad period in the second half where he dropped the ball and then spear tackled the dude. And then you could tell he was pretty out of gas then. But the reason the Dogs were able to sort of get back into this game is because they got those lighter, faster middles out there. And they were just sort of playing with a bit of speed that South Sydney couldn't quite match, you know? And the Dogs, I thought they're like, you wouldn't call their attack good, but it does look a lot better when they get a little bit wider. And that's something we've been wanting a lot from them. And when we say that, we don't mean spin it wide to Stephen Crichton on tackle one and hope for the best. It's more just like, I think for everyone who takes the ball one off the ruck, their first instinct should always be to tip it on, right? Because they just don't have the athletes to go through the middle of the field on just about anyone. So to change that up, you can't go at the A defender because you'll get monstered. And when they did go at the A defender, they did get monstered. If they can get at the B defender, the C defender, the guys who are two or three wide, that speeds up the tempo of the match, which I think would suit them. And it just sort of plays away from one of their weaknesses, which is their size. And Canterbury were getting into it. But because Souths, even in this state they're in, have the ability to score from deep all the time, you know, and they did that in the second half where Whiten scored that try where he showed, like, it was a really nice bit of center play, got on the outside of Stephen Crichton, put Johnson away, and then backed up and scored. And the Dogs just didn't have anyone that could really do that, especially without Okar off the field, you know. And the Dogs tried really hard and they look okay every now and then, but it's just a lot of really little things that keep bringing him down. Like Taff at the back, on kick returns, he keeps going sideways and he's not robust enough to do that. There's a reason he was getting ragdolled all the time, you know, and Drew Hutch is like a cunning player, but they're asking him to swing around and play both sides of the field at first receive. And I just don't know if he's quick enough for that. You know, Jamin Salmon was really, really poor, I thought, especially when he was out in the centers and bad on his decoy runs and stumbling into people. And it's just like it's a lack of attention to detail thing. And one of the things that I love citing on this show is when a game finishes three tries all, but there still feels like there's a gap between the teams. And it shows you which team was sort of paying attention to the little things and which one wasn't. And this game was three tries all, you know, and I think it illustrated that really illustrated the difference of where the two teams were on the day.
Yeah. I thought Hutchinson had a tough game here. There was multiple times where their right-hand side in attack was screaming for the ball and he, for no reason, really cut back infield and got tackled and took a settler. He did that on three or four occasions. In that second half, there was a couple of really bad ones where they just had the numbers and didn't use them. Are they going to change up their halves combination soon?
I think they are. I think Toby Sexton's going to play this week because, like I said, we've got like a four-game sample size now, and I totally understand why Drew Hutch would have got this jersey for round one. He's a great trainer. He's really, really great around the boys. He's very popular teammate, and he is a really smart footballer, but I just don't think he has the speed to do the job that they want him to do, especially if Burton's just going to hang out on the left side all the time, you know. And when the Dogs were able to get stuff going, it was when Burton was linking with Kikau and Crichton and Crichton's changing sides every other bloody week. When Burton and Kikau are linking down that left, that's when Canterbury looked good. But in trying to get that combination going, they've sort of just stuck Burton there and it's kind of reduced his effectiveness a little bit. You know, I want him pushing all around the field. I want him almost attacking more like a fullback in the way that he supports. And right now that's just not happening. So tough times in Belmore.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think Souths will get a far better look of whether Souths will fix any of their issues this weekend against the Warriors. Should be an interesting one, but yeah, I just on the halves as well. Like I I don't think that anyone thought that bringing in Hawkins for Ilias was going to be this massive seismic change. I think it was more the fact that they needed to make a change. It was the only one they could make. But he's been quite poor in these first couple of weeks as well. I thought his kicking game in this game was very bad. They dabbed that same sort of nothing kick into their right, the Bulldogs left, to Taff in that second half 5 or 6 times, but with absolutely no pressure on him whatsoever. And yeah, that aspect of their game is still really bad, like one of the worst in the competition. And I don't really know how it gets better. He's supposed to be good at that. It's supposed to be his thing, kicking the footy.
A lot of the time when he's shaping to kick the ball, he's got like a very fluid technical process. And I'm like, wow, this guy looks like he really knows how to kick a ball. But then the kicks just aren't that flash. So he's halfway there, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I will say did quite well defensively on Bill Kickout as far as, I mean, to the best of our expectations. So.
Yeah, he did. And like, just getting this one win will do South's confidence a world of good. I mean, I'm expecting them to play a lot differently against the Warriors. I'm expecting them just to play with a little bit more faith and belief in what they're doing. And with some of the guys they have, if they play that way, who knows? Who knows what that could tip into? I want to shout out Talis Duncan really quickly as well.
Very energetic when he came on.
Very energetic when he came on. And energy is what that South's middle really, really needs. It's sort of been quite plodding through a month. So getting someone like him who's got that real leg speed can really knock holes in things. Good to have.
Yep, completely agree. It's I'd forgotten how fun the Good Friday games are to win, like regardless of where Souths are on the table or how I'm feeling about them as a whole. Because my goodness, is that opposition fan base.
A great occasion.
They are the biggest sooks on the internet. But they want to be victims so badly. They want to be persecuted so badly. The moment Gerard Sutton was appointed as the referee of this game, they'd already had it in their brains that he was going to cost them the game. Even in a game where they got twice as many penalties and twice as many set restarts.
That reminds me of something to do with Grant Atkins and Liam Kennedy.
It was just so beautiful to see.
Feels familiar.
Oh, yeah, Liam Kennedy had a great game this week. You're right. Yeah, it was just so beautiful to see that blow up because it's always coming no matter what. I thought, you know, I do think Isaiah Tass should have been sinned, but that's really, I think, the only call that was particularly bad.
Oh, look, I wouldn't say they were bad calls. There were a few 50-50s I thought that were a little bit rough, but that happens in any game. I do think the six again that got turned into a penalty for offside, I thought that was, and Latrell kicked the goal and it put him up. I think it put him up 18-12. I thought that was probably a little bit crook, but like they're just 50-50
to be calling about offsides.
Other weeks you get those calls. Like it's
I guess.
Just,
I mean, they also, there was radio silence about the, what would have been an 8-point try for Blake Taff sliding into Jack White, which he was then charged for. So,
hey, well, Latrell did get charged for the thing on Ado Carr, and then nothing happened on the day, you know?
But one of those was talked about at length for 3 days, and the other one was ignored completely.
Well, yeah, because who complains about the refs when you win?
No, I don't complain about them either way, mate, but it's just interesting how that works. But also, on the Latrell thing, they're not going to fight it because they don't want to submit Latrell to that media circus, and that's understandable, but I think they should. It's ridiculous that he's being charged. I don't think he did anything wrong. What do you think?
I think it's one of those ones that you can easily categorize as like careless, but I'm sort of getting to the point where I have no idea what the judiciary looks for anymore. It's actually, unless you're doing a hip drop, it's actually really, really hard to get suspended. Unless you're doing one of the things that they're specifically cracking down on, it's not as easy to get suspended as it once was. So
I honestly think he got charged because people complained so much after the game online. I really feel that way. I'm not going to expect you to sit here and agree with me because, you know, whatever. But like, honest to God, I really don't think he did anything wrong. It was a very unfortunate incident what happened. But, you know, I really just don't think he did anything wrong.
Suspend them all and let God sort them out.
Sure. Well, how will that work?
I don't know. It's just a dumb thing that I said.
Well, you don't have to clarify that the thing you said was dumb. Anyway,
I assume everyone knows how dumb the things I say are.
Moving on. Brisbane 38, Cowboys 12, the first loss of the season for North Queensland. It was no Reece Walsh, no worries for Brisbane, although he did look very sharp in his little cowboy hat.
There was nothing little about that cowboy hat. That was a 10-gallon hat. So we both tipped the Cowboys to win this game.
If I'd seen that picture beforehand.
If I knew that Reece Walsh was going to wear that hat, I would have tipped Brisbane. How can you bet against Reece the Hat Walsh? And I want this to go further. I want every Brisbane player to have their own specific fun hat that they wear when they're not playing. And we can mix it up, right? We can mix it up. Mm. Pat Carrigan can wear a top hat. Corey Oates can wear one of those caps with a propeller on top. You know, let's put Jesse Arthurs in some sort of skull cap, a yarmulke or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's see what sort of hat game.
Can someone have the balloon hat that fan that was arguing with Russell Westbrook today had?
I didn't see that, but I'm in. Let's get the boys wearing hats. Let's really see how we can go with this. Have you ever worn a cowboy hat?
No, have you? I assume so.
I have, but I think to wear a cowboy hat, you have to believe you can wear a cowboy hat.
You know? And you do believe you're from the country. So.
Yeah, I know, but I don't believe it enough to wear the cowboy hat. When I was in Wichita, Kansas once, and I was wearing a 4X corduroy hat. I got a lot of beer-related
great hat.
And I was sitting, I was going to a country music show that night, so there's a lot of very country people around. I was sitting there having a beer, and I get talking to the guy next to me. He's wearing a big cowboy hat. And he goes to me, "Oh my God, man, you got 4Xs on your hat. Is that like a moonshine hat or something?" And I was like, "No." I was like, "No, it's a beer brand. It's a beer brand back home." And he's like, "Oh man, that's so cool. I'm gonna drop the accent." He goes, "Man, that's so cool. I'll put it on and take a photo of it and send it to my boys." I was like, "Yeah, sweet, no worries." And he do that and he goes, "Man, I'm really taken with this hat." He goes, "What if I trade you this cowboy hat for it?" And I was like, "Really?" And he was like, yeah. And I was like, "I don't know, man. I don't know if I can wear a cowboy hat." And he goes, "Mate, just put it on, see how you feel." So I put it on and it was fun. But I was like, I'll never wear this again. You know? And I love the 4X cord hat.
You could easily get another 4X cord hat.
I could, but I feel like you've blown that one.
I've swapped jerseys with a guy at the World Cup before. Did I want an Everton Phil Jagielka jersey? No, not really. But you do it for the story. And that was a great story you just told. But it would be even better if you come home with that.
I said to the guy, I said, "Man, I don't think I love the hat, but I don't think I can do it." And he said to me, "Well, if you don't believe you can wear a cowboy hat, you can't wear a cowboy hat." So this is just a little bit of little cowboy wisdom for you, man. And then that became a saying that we have back on the ranch.
Well, City Campton, the evidence is piling up. So. Oh,
well, dude, if I had the cowboy hat, it just comes home and just sits there forever. Like, you know. And now I've got some wisdom, hard won, but here we go. So
that's good. I did enjoy Bob Catter coming out as well, saying he's not joined the Broncos coaching staff. So, good work, Bob.
As soon as I saw Reese in the hat, I knew that there were going to be a lot of memes of that bit in The Simpsons. Because don't be alarmed, Apu. Just carry on with your normal business like I'm not wearing the hat.
That hat was 3 days from retirement. I hope that we spend more time talking about this hat than we do the Titans game in a minute. But anyway, back to this game.
Mate, the Titans, that's a team that could do with some good headwear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dump them, boys.
The first half an hour of this game was batshit insane.
It really was, wasn't it? Like, and that whole first half was crazy because Brisbane were so committed and focused and disciplined in the way they were playing. I was so, so, so impressed. And they were the better team for 39 minutes and 30 seconds of that first half. And the Cowboys were the better team for 30 seconds. And it was the 30 seconds they scored their two tries, you know? And it was like how are the Cows only down by 8 points or whatever it was. Todd Payton said after the game that they deserved to be down by plenty more, and I agreed. But then that makes the second half even more impressive because Brisbane never lost that commitment and that focus and that discipline and really just ground this one out in very, very impressive fashion.
Which of those early tries was your favorite? Was it the banana kick, the insane Fletcher Baker pass, or the team try that led to the Drinkwater score?
I am a sucker for like quick interchanges of passing. So probably the Drinkwater one.
I can't believe you're going with the big fella throwing a fucking massive cutout ball.
Yeah, there's great things to like about all of them. Maybe it's a sympathy thing for Drinkwater because he had such a shocker aside from that.
He did.
And like, but that was a really smart, it was a really smart ploy on Brisbane's part because Scott Drinkwater, like I love him as a footballer, but he can have mistakes in him. And sometimes those errors can compound and he can really lose his way. And Reynolds, I think, went out there with a very clear plan to test the entire Cowboys back three because Felt's got an error in him too, but Drinkwater especially. And he just had him in the pain box all night, you know? And to me, that was kind of the foundation on which Brisbane built the rest of their game. That was sort of the rock on which they built their church this very good Friday, you know?
Yeah, I think that a lot of we've bitched and moaned about Dalian points a lot this year, but Adam Reynolds with the clearest six of all time. He just kicked them to death and he tormented poor Scott Drinkwater all night long. And that was a really good game plan. Then the rain came out of absolutely nowhere about 15 minutes before kickoff and the heavens opened and it was wet and wild. And they used that to their advantage. They had that ball bouncing around back there all night and Drinkwater just really failed to do a lot with it.
17 errors for the Cows, right? Mm. Drinkwater alone had six.
Six is quite a lot. And then things like not being in the picture frame when a kick is scored is also not even an error, but it's also like a mistake on his part.
Not great. But you compare that to Brisbane. So Selwyn Cobbo had five errors on his own, right? Which is a lot.
Mm.
But in the entire rest of the team only had two. You know, in a game like that, in conditions like that, that's really, really impressive, I reckon. And, you know, Cobbo had his five, so it's not a perfect.
Well, hang on,
does
Dearden's cover tackle count as an error for him?
I don't think so. But like one of those errors was Cobbo, that try that got disallowed. So he was like jumping up to catch a ball. So it's not like it was five clean drops or anything.
No.
This isn't about Cobbo. It's more about the rest of the team.
Yeah, two errors is unbelievable.
Really, really good stuff, you know. And like Brisbane just went back to so much of what works for them. Like Jordan Ricci's kick chase was really, really good. Again, probably for the first time this year, you know, Staggs was really powerful in both attack and defense. Pat Carrigan probably had his best game of the entire season. Kobe Hetherington's defense really, really turned up again. And I thought Xavier Willison was great off the bench as well. And I think he's firming by the week to be the person who sort of replaces Tom Flegler's aggression and athleticism in that forward rotation. Jensen's still probably going to be fine as the starter. He gets his meters and he's quite solid. But those qualities that Flegler brought, I think Willison's going to be able to bring those. So yeah, just super impressive from Brisbane.
Yeah, the Cowboys are an interesting one because they did come into this 3-0, but it wasn't exactly like they played a murderer's row of teams. And I think they were very, very fortunate to win that Newcastle game. And they were made to look second rate here. And I think my biggest concern from their point of view is we know that they've got the back five that can create points out of nothing. We know that there's always going to be an error in Scott Drinkwater. And we know that defensively he's got his issues, but that's part of the past. That's part of the charm. That's part of the Scott Drinkwater experience. And they have to understand that. Their forward pack, I look at it at the moment and I'm a little bit worried, man. I think maybe Father Time has caught up to Jason Taumalolo. And I don't know if there's really anyone in that team behind him that's remotely capable of becoming even close to like the leader of that forward pack in the way that he was.
I'm not a little bit worried about Taumalolo. I am terrified that it's over.
Any more years on his contract?
Who gives a shit? We're talking about right now. So Taumalolo is one of my favorite non-Raiders ever, right? And I think he's the premier running forward of the last 25 years. But he looks like a different player now. You know, and I know that there's been those weeks where he's played 20 odd minutes, where he's played that first in and not come back on. The whole point of managing him like that is for games like this, where you need him to be the rocket fuel, where you need him to dig deep and go down into the cellar and bring out one of those great old games that he's had so many times in the past. And I just don't know if he has that in him anymore. There was like one run where he bumped off Corey Jensen, where he looked like the Taumalolo of old, but that was kind of it, you know. And he was so heavy on his feet for the Billy Walters try and the Tyson Smoothie try. And I've been fighting against the Taumalolo's washed thing because I don't want it to be over. I want him to keep doing well, but like there's no other conclusion that you could come to. And we said on our Cowboys preview, you take Taumalolo out of that Cowboys middle, all of a sudden it looked very like the Sharks at their worst, you know?
Yeah.
And they need more. If Taumalolo can't really provide it, they're going to need more from other people. I don't think they're going to be able to carry Jake Granville and Sam McIntyre as two of their bench.
Yeah. What's doing there? Jake Granville, great servant to this sport, but the fact that he's still on their bench every week in 2024 to me is crazy.
They're gonna need a little bit more muscle. They're gonna have to find someone who can sort of offer those explosive qualities that Taumalolo really can't anymore. You know, this was an extremely disappointing game all the way through for the Cows, because I think the only player on the team who played with a lot of consistent application through the entire match was Tom Dearden. every, like, we're all talking about Drinkwater, but Holmes had a shocker as well. He was making a lot of errors. You know, Jeremiah Nene, for someone who's experienced at the top level as he is now, really, really ineffective. Like, even Ruben Cotter, when he got caught out for that first try to Billy Walters, just not playing anywhere near their capabilities. And I guess there's a good parallel here with the Roosters loss to Penrith on Thursday night. Both times it was teams who should be looking to take that next step up, and they played one of the top teams without two key guys, and they got taught a lesson, man. And that's it. Brisbane taught them a lesson.
Yeah. But look, by the way, $950,000 a year for 2025, 2026, and 2027.
Not great.
Not great. But Brisbane's super impressive to do that without Rhys Walsh. And they left some points out there. They were just fantastic. They were really, really good. I was thoroughly impressed by them. And, you know, these 4X derbies, Nick, they can be tricky. They can be tricky fixtures. But
the first rule of the 4X derby. Throw out the rule book.
That's right. Especially because we don't actually know the rules of the 4X derby. That would be the main reason to throw it out.
New South Wales just doesn't get the 4X derby.
But maybe, I feel like you're an honorary 4X derby member holding on to your 4X hat with
All our Broncos listeners would not have that. they are not my biggest fan.
Ah, oh, well, I like you.
That's all right. You gotta hate something. I was really happy to see Corey Oates get that try.
That was great. That was Menzies' 2011 grand final vibes.
You know what? It was exactly like that.
Which grand final did he score? Yeah, it was. I said, "Hey, all right." I corrected myself. Relax,
man. Come on,
all right.
Get it together.
Don't you get it together, mate? You said Stephen Crichton played on the wrong side of the field 5 minutes ago, and I didn't say a word because one of us supports his friend, and the other one puts him down to make himself feel better. I'll let you work out which one you are.
I'm the supportive one.
it was
cool to see him get back out there and score the try and all that. And I actually think I would want him on this Broncos bench permanently, because having a guy who can cover the outside backs and cover second row, even if he's just covering second row for 10 odd minutes, like he was in this one, that's such a valuable thing to have.
Yeah.
And like, he's clearly a very popular player with the boys. You could see that reaction after he scored. He's such a popular player with the fan base. It energizes the crowd. It energizes the team. Like, I would really like to see them do that going forward. Their bench is going to be an important piece for them down the stretch, and I think it's starting to work itself out. I think Willison's got to have a spot there, and I think Oates has got to have a spot there, and they're slowly finding their way to their best 17.
Particularly when you factor in all these games this year that have been kind of derailed by an injury in the back five that's not been able to activate the 18th man. So, like, I think I'm with you there, mate. Cause, like, just having that guy, I mean, even having him against Penrith might have helped him a fair bit. So
100%, 100%. Yeah, Tristan Saylor really tidy at the back again. Someone's paying him this year, right? Someone's going to come and pick him up and offer him the big starting job. Do we want to talk about the Dearden tackle? It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was awesome. One of the best I've seen. It was great.
I've got it below Sattler's.
Yeah,
but above Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely above Edwards.
Edwards is amplified because it was the grand final, but
yeah,
I think this was from a pure like tackle point. I think this one was better.
I think the only cover tackle that was more difficult was Darren Albert on Matt Sears.
Oh yeah.
But that's from a technical standpoint, that's the only one I think was
that one was crazy. The first time I was watching that, like on whatever it should boots and all probably, I was like, how is this bloke not gonna score? And then he does.
Well, that one's so cool, it's because they were the two fastest players in the game that year. That's like Addo Carr running down
Alex Johnson. Yep, I agree.
Sure. You know what? He got injured this week, so you can have that one. See, yeah, that's why I'm the supportive friend.
Okay, the support. Yeah, 6 weeks, rough, very rough. The Irvine family voodoo dolls paying off. Do you remember when Adam Reynolds ran Chris Sandow down?
That was good.
Sandow got the big contract from Parramatta, and Reynolds was the heir apparent. That was a crazy one as well.
What about that moment where Sandow was going from fast halfback to not that anymore? And Reynolds was making his own journey towards not really being able to run. And it was probably only on that night where that chase down could have happened that way.
It was beautiful.
But it did happen that way.
I was there. It's great. So, Tristan Saylor, someone's signing him for some big money this
year. Oh, no question.
Oh, forget about it. I didn't like there was no 3 p.m. game, Nick. It threw me off. Rattled me on Saturday. But then we got to 5:30 and we were treated to a game that made me think, hey, maybe less rugby league is good. It's the Dragons.
This game started like going into some weird places, and I was kind of into it. I am into weird shit occasionally, you know.
Tommy Tavojevic has one of the best offloads I've ever seen, and then after that has possibly his worst ever game. I think it was four or five errors by the end. It was incredible.
Stundy still didn't pick up a Dally M
point. I honestly was thinking that when I opened it. His brother did, though. So, you know. So, yeah, a solid win for Dragons.
Fantastic. Six runs for 51 meters for Jake. 100%. That's real Dally M stuff.
Unbelievable. Jack Brady told me that the Eagles haven't won in Wollongong since 1998 or something. So,
oh, wow. Yeah,
not a place they like going.
Tough times for the team of the show.
Yeah, really. They seem to have turned back into a pumpkin. That's not great. We don't want that. No good.
Boom, the Boom Rookies boost can only do so much, you know?
It's true. That is true. But yeah, a really rough game. I mean, Ben Hunt terrorized Tommy Talau. We talked about how Reynolds kicked him to death by Target Drinkwater. Hunt did something similar here, with especially picking out Tommy Talau and Jackson Ballo to an extent as well. Not two guys who you would regard as safe in terms of kick defense, and the Dragons took full advantage of that. I thought the first 40 minutes... But Manly were pretty poor for the whole game. But I thought the Dragons in the first half played very well. And then the entire second half of this game was a war cry.
who should have to answer for this at the Hague?
Well, we want to send our most well-spoken man. So it's got to be DCA. He can probably get it down to a play deal.
He'll make it happen. Yeah, look, from a skill standpoint, the second half was not much to write home about. But I thought that the toughness the Dragons played with was very, very impressive to me. This was the first game where I saw just the smallest flashes of them really, really looking like a Shane Flanagan side. And that mainly came through in their defense. You know, and I know they gave Manly a lot of chances, and on another day, Manly would probably cut them up pretty easily. But the second efforts they were making, particularly in the middle of the field, Manly, I think in the last 20, realized we can't get anything going out wide because we can't hold onto the ball. So we're going to focus all our attack up the middle of the field, go for changes of angles, try and get Trbojevic going up, which was a smart thing to do. But Saints were alive to it, you know, and Saints kept really working hard for one another, and they showed a lot of spirit, and that's what sort of won them the day, you know. And like, I don't think it's panic stations for Manly, when you play the way they do with so many big shifts and hitting both sides of the field so often and so much passing and so much intricate play like that, there are occasionally going to be games like this, you know? Like, the more passes you throw, the more often you go wide, you're going to make more errors. That's just sort of how this game's played. But, like, really, really impressed with the spirit that Saints showed. Like, loved the Jack Bird Tolu Kola battle. They were really going at each other. That was good stuff. There was that period at the start of the second half where Saints defended 15 straight tackles from Manly on their own line, and then when they got the ball, Bird earned a penalty with a really, really strong carry. And it just little things like that. When we talk about efforts on efforts, which is a little bit of coach speak that's sort of snuck into the vernacular, a lot of the time we're talking about defense, right? We're talking about someone pushing across in defense or making a tackle and then chasing from marker. But sometimes an effort on effort can be something like that, you know, where the whole team has put in the great defensive effort and then someone finds the juice to do something like that and earn that way. So, yeah, a lot of ticker from Saints, a lot of spirit.
Speaking of effort, I want to wrap Jaden Sewer as well. I think he had a great game, but especially where the hell did he come from in that passage where it ended up with the Olakau'atu kick and he comes in and cleans it up and saves a try. Like, I was like,
not only did he clean it up, he then fought his way out of the in goal as well.
Unbelievable.
He had a great game.
Super impressed with him. I think their forwards were pretty good, held their own. I know that obviously Seca had a very good game for Manly, but I think behind him, I mean, Olakau'atu is always going to get his, isn't he? He's a great player, but I think the Dragons held their own. I thought Kyle Flanagan had a pretty solid game as well. Things are maybe clicking a little bit more for the Dragons than we thought. So that's good to see. But then it's weird. I think Zach Lomax on the wing has been fantastic so far.
Yeah,
but he just
I wanted to talk about this.
This is a really unique situation where we have a guy who has no desire to play a position, but it's pretty inarguable. And Jack Bird was great as well. So it's like, it's pretty inarguable that like it's best for the team if he plays there. And it's not like he's been playing. He's been really good. He's been really, really good.
Well, him and Hunt have been their two best players, you know. Mm.
So It's a really curious situation because, again, it's not like you're shoehorning a guy into a position he doesn't want to play and he's sucking at it. This is as far from an Aiden Caesar situation as it can possibly be. He's killing it, but he doesn't want to do it. And there's murmuring's been around for weeks now that he's going to go to, I think Parramatta's the big rumor, and Manly's the other one's been floating around, coincidentally enough. But I mean, after a game like this, when you actually your team plays quite well and you yourself have a really good game playing in this position, I know you don't want to play there, but at the end of the day, I mean, you're still getting paid same amount you're getting paid when you were a center.
Yeah.
And it's better for the team. And on a personal level, you're having really solid games.
It might be better for you, yeah.
I just can't understand why he's so against it.
So Flanagan said after the game that for Lomax to get the early release, he'd have to get something very, very good in return. Sort of a couple of the names that were floating around over the weekend were Ryan Madison from Parramatta or Nelson Asaifa Solomona from
Saints. Those are some ambitious targets.
But I think... I know it's only a month, but I think with some of the football Lomax has played, I think you can afford to hang out for someone like that because it's clear that he's starting to realise a little bit of that talent that he has. I wonder what would happen if Saints win a few more games. Winning does fix everything, but I was really taken by the visual spectacle of this game. It looked like Wynn Stadium looked like it was absolutely going off. And it was one of those games where I was watching on TV and I was like, I should be there. Why aren't I there?
Why aren't all my Wollongong friends went home for the weekend? That's
yeah. Why aren't I there? Feeling the sea breeze in the captain's lounge, watching the Dragons and Manly go at it. But when the Dragons turned away Manly's last attack, Kyle Flanagan forces that error, and they all sort of a few of the guys were really revving up the crowd and really getting into it. And Lomax was one of them, you know. And I know he's from Tamora, but he's lived in Wollongong a long, long time now. He had his last couple of years at school there. He's very much been a part of that community for a long time. And I wonder how things might change if Saints are just a little bit successful. Not heaps, just a little bit. And I'm not even saying that's realistic. But like if the team starts winning a bit and there's a bit of a buzz around town and everyone's excited about Saints for the first time in probably 6 or 7 years, I don't know, man. Maybe he falls back in love with the club, falls back in love with the area and thinks, why would I leave this? You know, so I don't know. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I wonder what sort of impact that would have.
He's still super young as well. He's only 24. Yeah. Like, this has got super, so much football ahead of him.
Barely scratched the surface of what
but
he's
like, you know, they've got, you know, the Knights next, then the West Tigers, then they host the Warriors. So that game might be down in Wollongong. And, you know, the Warriors not great in Australia. So that's, you know, there's a couple of very winnable games on the horizon too. Yeah. So
who knows? Like, I think it's smart for Flanagan to ask for someone big in return. And I think it's pretty clear that Lomax is responding to what Flanagan's putting down. You know, he put him on the wing. We talked about in the preseason. It was to make him uncomfortable. It was either to challenge him to get the best out of him or to engineer a situation where he wants out of the club. Unbelievably, both of those things have happened. You know, it's challenged him and brought the best out of him. It's also made him pretty adamant about leaving. So I don't know. I think there's a few twists in that tale yet, but he's certainly playing some good footy.
He sure is. I'm not worried about the team of the pod yet, are you?
Not really. There's probably a couple of things they gotta tighten up. Those wingers are gonna be an issue just because like you said, they're not the safest of lads. Like, it wasn't that long ago that the Tigers were planning to turn Tommy Shalhoub into a back rower. You know, and both of those guys, I think it'd just be a little bit easy to isolate them, to really go after them. But most of this loss, I think, was down to execution. You know, Tom Trbojevic won't make four errors again.
No, that's
quite
true.
A while. So, no panic stations yet. The team of the pod staying strong.
Okay, and for 10 glorious minutes on the Gold Coast, it looked like the Titans were back. But no, it's just more of the same.
Yeah, Campbell made a big difference early.
Yeah, I thought so too.
At 10-0, you're like, wow, maybe something's happening here. But then, but then nothing was happening.
We were not back, so, as they say, as the kids say. But, a pretty poor performance from them after those opening exchanges. Campbell gave them a real injection of unpredictability and speed in their backline shifts. And it was kind of funny because they were they they were getting ready to sort of inject David Fifita into that game as that hip drop tackle from Max Plath happened.
Yeah.
And like you think, oh, down to 12, we're bringing on our best player. You know, let's gear up. Let's get something going here. And then just nothing happened. It was like,
Plath got binned and it fired up the Dolphins. It ended up being a better thing for the Dolphins than it was for the Titans, because the Dolphins sort of really committed to grafting things out and grinding it out. And Isaiah Katoa was making some really good choices with his kicking game. The kick chase was really, really strong. Oh, this was his best game in first grade. Mm. I thought he managed the attack really, really well. And it was just little things. He wasn't going for the big highlight reel play all the time. He was focusing on getting good field position with his kicks and then backing his team to use their defense to get the ball in a slightly better position for their next set. And they would do that two or three times. And then all of a sudden they were attacking the Titans line. You know, it wasn't as impressive a showing for my guy, Tana Boyd. Look, me and TB, we go back a long way. We served in NAM together, actually. So yep. I'm always going to be on his side. But even I, the world's biggest Tana Boyd fan, it's getting tough.
If they trot him out there again next week, that is negligent. But defensively, he has just been so bad.
Oh, dude,
You couldn't justify like a Josh, a Scott Drinkwater level of like attacking ability to trade off the bad defensive play. But you're not getting that either. You're getting sort of pedestrian play and attack and diabolical.
I'm not just saying this because I'm TB's number one ticket holder.
Mm.
I can see a world where he doesn't get dropped because he did, like, he got worked on both those defensive plays. But if you wanted to, you can spin that into, well, he got his body in front of him and he just got bumped off. That happens. You know, that's the sort of attitude that we need. But yeah, there needs to be a change. There probably needs to be a couple of changes to this Titans team.
What the hell are they going to do?
I really don't know, man.
Your man, Bo Famore, has been not great this year. He hasn't been the same guy since that injury.
Traded his speed for a lot of shithousery.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting choice. Like, their best player in this game was Phil Sammy, who was on a bung knee for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, what's doing? Like, what are we talking about here?
Not sure. They have so many talented outside backs, but there's just, I look at the forward pack and then I look at the bench. There's no one, like, once Fifita starts games again, and I feel like the bench was a one-time thing for him. I feel like he'll be back in the starting line this week. Like, they're not going to be getting any sort of spark from the guys that they've got in that interchange rotation. And then the rest of the forward pack, bar Mofo and Fifita, is just pretty rough as well. I don't know. They'll win some games at some point. Like, they will. But I just don't know where this turnaround is going to come from.
They've been bad for a while, but they were never boring.
Mm.
And now they're both.
It's not great.
Which is not great.
Hammer was really good again.
Hammer was really strong. I really enjoyed how he fitted really nicely into the structures of their attack. You know, he's super fast and his support plays great. And I love it how the second there's an error from the other team or a loose ball and he's pushing up and looking for that looking to flip the field really, really quickly. But the next step for him as a fullback is fitting into structure well and creating things for other people as easily as he finishes other people's creations. And I thought he did that with both the Jack Bostock tries, showed really nice hands with both of them. And with the try he scored himself, you know, like they did a little bit of that thing that the Warriors do sometimes where they get one of their front rowers running on the edge of the field to try and isolate a defender. In this case, Tom Flegler isolated Tana Boyd. It looked like a big brother running over his little brother. And who was there? The Hammer was there, like pushing up in the structure of the attack the way he's meant to. Really nice, because that's the next step he has to take with his game. Yeah. So good for him.
Yeah, I thought Jack Bostock bounced back really well from the early era. I thought he had a pretty solid game after that. I mean,
he could be anything. He's a giant.
He's got all
the
tools.
He's a giant, but like a powerful giant, you know?
And then you look at the rest of that, like Farnworth, Avarillo, I mean, Farnworth especially, both great players. Asako, a very solid NRL-level winger, and the Hammer is just an excitement machine. If they can get, if they've got that guy, if they've got a guy in Bostock, I mean, that's a very strong back five. Very, very strong. Nice. Thought he was, he played quite well. I thought Flegler led from the front in this one really effectively
as
well.
He was terrific.
They signed him to be this guy, and in this game, he was that guy. So, yeah, full steam ahead for the Dolphins, who are they first?
They are, yeah.
Play the Tigers at home this week.
I wish Galvin was playing. That'd be a beauty if they were both fully loaded.
But if he's not, I mean, that's could be another win for them, and you know, just cruising along. Wayne's glad done you, it again.
Glad you mentioned Flegler, because he really did lead the way with his power and his athleticism. But I thought a lot of their other guys, particularly their bench guys, really followed him well. Like I thought Jesse Bromwich had his best game in a good while, and so did Josh Kerr. And they're kind of similar physically. Like they're not small fellas or anything like that, but they're not like Flegler, who have sort of Flegler has a sort of overwhelming power to him sometimes. Bromwich has sort of gotten older, and Josh Kerr it probably isn't that same caliber of athlete, but they both passed really well and they both offloaded really well. And it just made things all the more difficult for the Titans because they just kind of were dealing with a variety of threats. You know, Jesse Bromwich, another long-term favorite of mine. Every time he sort of pulls something out and looks like 2015 Jesse Bromwich again for a couple of seconds, I always really, really like it. And he did with that nice short ball to Kerr when they combined for that try. And he did with a couple of nice offloads as well. So good to see one of the old fellas doing well.
Yeah, I think that he did quite well for them. And yeah, with the minutes Flegler's playing and they're getting 80 out of both their back rows, it allows them to be pretty sort of, you know, that they can just really just use those other guys on the bench for little stints when they need to. At one point in this game, I think it was when the sin bin happened. We do love a defensive coordinator call, but when the sin bin happened, the commentator was like, oh, and with 12 on the field, here comes the defensive specialist, Ray Stone. And I was like, fuck yeah, Ray. Just go out there and tackle everything. And you know what? 20 tackles, one missed in like 20-something minutes of play. So he did his job. Defensive specialist, Ray Stone.
What kind of defensive coordinator do you think Ray Stone would be?
A very old school one. A very old school one. A lot of blitzing.
A lot of empty backfields.
Like, you know, Wink Martindale? Like, yeah, that kind of guy.
I was thinking like Dick LeBeau.
That works.
Like
too.
I'm going.
Bro, that guy was old as shit when he was still coach. That was crazy.
I think I've mentioned it before, but one of the Hall of Fame tweets is, "I want my offensive coordinator to have worked at Lockheed Martin and not know the names of his own children, and I want my defensive coordinator to live in a shack in the woods with no mobile phone."
Yep, absolutely.
And that 100%. Latter one, that's a bit of Ray Stone.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, Dick LeBeau was still working for the Titans when he was 80 in 2017. That's when he
hell yeah, brother.
I'm up. Fuck yeah, Dick. Let's go. But, defensive specialist Ray Stone coming in.
Love
and
it.
You know what? Kept things tight. They didn't score any points.
Yeah, they showed a lot of resilience. And I think the Dolphins, an important thing for this year is just sort of raising their floor. Like they had like for periods in the first half of last season, they had quite a high ceiling. You know, they were able to match it with it, maybe not beat a lot of the top teams, but they were able to match it with them. That kind of fell away as the season went on.
Well, they got a bit more depth this year as well, I think, which will help.
Bit more depth, bit more athleticism. Like guys like Katoa are much better for the run. I think that their floor is going to be a little bit higher than it was last year, which is that's how you raise the ceiling. You raise the floor first.
Yeah, slow down.
Foundations and some walls, and then you can put a roof on it, and bang, you've got a ceiling, brother. That's how it works.
Yeah. Do you remember? I don't know how keenly you listened to the show before you were on it. I know you listened to it a fair bit, but whatever year it was when the Bulldogs were absolutely horrible, Mitch and I got to a point where we
got to narrow it down.
Sorry, but it was we got to a point where instead of discussing their performances in their games, we just talked about a different type of dog for 5 minutes every week.
I don't remember that. That's a great gag.
How many more weeks of this before we start just quoting random scenes from Remember the Titans line for line?
Or what if we just start referring to the players from Remember the Titans?
I like thought Gary Bertier was pretty poor tonight.
Yeah, Bertier, I expect better, man. He's an All-American, you know. What was Ryan Gosling's character's name?
He wasn't Sunshine. He was the other Sunshine was the other white guy with the long hair. Ryan Gosling's character's name was what was his name? Was it Petey?
No, Petey
was Donald Faison.
Yeah, Petey replaces him in the backfield.
That's it. Allen. They're taking my boy out.
I know his old man didn't like it, but you got to hook Allen. He's a liability out there, man. Just not making any plays. I know Petey Jones is new to the defensive side of the ball, but Need that speed out there. Need those ball hawk instincts.
Remember that the guy that Bertier's mate that they cut from the team because he's not playing.
Oh, Ray.
Ray Buds. That's a racist guy name if ever.
What's a more racist name? Ray Buds or Buds Ray?
I think Ray Buds.
Ray
still.
Buds. Old RB.
That's a very racist name. So, I mean, you know what? It's stuck to the brief. So you can't hate on him. He can because he's a racist.
he stuck to the brief.
He did. That's a sick movie. Yeah, three or four more weeks of this shit and we start doing that.
I gotta start, like, I don't care if they lose, just start scoring some points. Start doing something, dog.
Oh man, Wood Harris is Julius Campbell. Fuck yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah, you'd know who Wood Harris is if you watch The Wire, which you haven't.
I know Wood Harris because he's in Remember the Titans and he also had a memorable three episode arc on Justified. That's enough for me.
He did, but then when I messaged you and said Avon Barksdale is in Justified, you said, "Who's The Wire?"
Terrific. Fantastic. The thing about The Wire is it's not Justified, so
that's true.
I don't know if I can watch it. I'm only allowed to watch one show.
Oh, I can't argue with that. You're getting back to your country roots, of course, Justified, down in the holler. If you start living in a holler, I'll give you your country cred. Anyway.
Okay, it's been noted.
The Warriors, 20. The Knights, 12. Back to business for the Whites. They're looking okay again. Two in a row.
Yes, a very business-like display from them. They've sort of gotten into a habit of hot start and then hot start to both halves, really, and then sort of struggling to complete games out. But the Knights couldn't quite get their attack together enough to really test them or make them pay for that. Tuivasa-Sheck super, super busy at the back. Great to see. A little bit of the old magic as well, which is always really nice. Marcelo Montoya, really strong out of the backfield as well. I thought Mitch Barnett really put it up his former club. That's always nice to see. And Jackson Ford was terrific on that left edge. Like, he probably hadn't had a great start to the year. His hands had let him down a couple of times, but when he's doing his stuff, when he's running well, when he's using his athleticism and his fitness and going for those second efforts, those little one percenters, he's really, really effective. I've got him firmly in the country origin conversation when teams are selected next month. Very exciting stuff for Jackson Ford, the Gerringong Lion, and indeed all of Group 7. It's always nice to see one of those boys get a run.
Yeah, can't wait for the City Country episode. My beloved Mustard and Blue looking to go back-to-back. It's very exciting.
Why have you just arbitrarily decided that City won last year?
Because dibs, bang.
Damn it.
Yeah, can I get out?
You won that round.
The Knights forward pack is, it's not blowing me away at the moment. Even in the game they won last week, it wasn't great. And I think Knights fans are starting to be very concerned about the Saifidi situation.
What has happened to Daniel Saifidi?
I don't know, but I don't like
God
it.
God damn. I don't like it at all. I really don't like it either. It was probably sometime last year that Jacob like totally surpassed him as a player. And now it's kind of like the total reverse of what it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, where Daniel was one of the best props in the league, but then Jacob was just sort of just hanging on to a bench spot. Now it's flipped totally the other way. Daniel looks like a shell of his former self, especially defensively. And Jacob's still going okay, but he's not the power that he has been in the last couple of seasons, you know. And without those guys going forward, everything just becomes so much harder for him, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely a concern. And just where are the Knights going in general? I just don't know what to make of them at the moment.
That's part of the problem for a team that had so much time together last year. It's kind of remarkable how little cohesion they've got.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, especially between their playmakers. I know they've changed at halfback, but all those nice things that Gamble was able to do in connecting with Ponga last year, they've all sort of vanished. And yeah, it does really feel like that they're just kind of scratching around at the minute. We're not seeing any of the strengths that they sort of showed in the back half of last season. You know, Pong is trying everything at the back. Mm-hmm. Like he's, when things are happening, it's invariably because of him. But yeah, that's kind of the tough part. It, it's not just that they're in a funk. I agree with you. I don't really feel like I know not just where they're going, but where they want to go.
No. Home game against the Dragons this week. So that's going to tell us a lot more about them, I think. If they can't get the shit together for that one, then this is a far more... That's a primetime Channel 9 game on Friday night.
A lot of nights on Channel 9 this year.
Mm. Sure, why not? But I thought Ponga was decent for them, but not for Dally Endpoint decent. We can't do this every week, Nick, but...
No, you know what? We are going to do this every week. I'm proud to announce a new segment on the review show, Bad Dally M Vote of the Week.
Mm.
We don't have a drop for it or anything. We're working on that. But like some typically shit house Dally M votes all across this week, Matthew.
I think Brian Kelly getting 1 point for the Titans game has to be. I know the Ponga thing is probably going to have more ramifications at the end of the season, but
Ponga at least had a good game.
Yeah,
like it's dumb that he's got. Is it the most points? Yeah, he's got the most points out of this game, which is dumb. But at least he played.
If the Titans had chucked, if they chucked a point at Phil Sami, fine.
Totally get that. Brian Kelly, what the hell? He had a nice duel with Herbie Farnworth that he lost, and he set up the first try to Jamin Joloff with a grubber, and that's kind of it.
Really, real
mind bending stuff.
And we got a message from Brady on Instagram asking where was the Give Me the Fucking Ball Award last week. We are getting a drop made for that, so
we need the drop. We need the drop for that. The drop will make that segment, and once we have it, that segment will begin. To bounce back to the Warriors really, really quickly. Very impressed with Wade Egan. Like the improvement in him over the last, not just last year, because he was good the year before that. So it's very reminiscent to me of Jeremy Marshall King at the Dolphins. Like, just has such a great sense of when to run. Like, he's only running about three or four times a game, but every single one of them are good ones, you know. And he's very good at what I think has become sort of an underrated part of hooker play. He doesn't just have his forwards run off him in random fashion. He works them towards a certain part of the field, and he does that in conjunction with his halves, and that helps set up their attacking spreads. That's part of the reason the Warriors are so good at it. And it's a harder thing to quantify, but I think a measure of how good he's become is just how much worse they look when anyone else is in there. You know, Freddie Lussick tackles quite well, but Egan's just got a cerebral element to his play that I really, really enjoy. And while it's a real shame to see Luke Metcalf go down with that leg injury, it's looking like he's going to be out quite a while. He just cannot take a trick, the poor bugger. Like, just can't get consistent time the first. Every time, some part
it
of his body
It seems so innocuous as well.
I know. It sucks, man. And, like, because the only thing that's going to get him better now is more time in the middle, you know? And he's got everything he needs. So that's a real shame. But I was really, really happy for Chanel Harris-Tavita. But we've talked about a bit about him on the show before. He's a player I've always really, really rated. But I found his decision to leave the game for a year and sort of go on a bit of sabbatical was really brave and really mature, and something that I actually found quite compelling. He's spoken very well about it in the past. Friend of the show, George Clark, did a terrific yarn on him when he sort of announced it. And he looked really good when he was out there, you know, backed up to score a try, put over a nice cross kick for Montoya's try. He's probably going to get a lot more time in first grade. It seems like he's sort of gotten the jump on Tamari Martin as that primary backup in the halves. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see more of him.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what they do against the Rabbitohs next weekend. But moving on to Sunday night, Shark Park.
Oh, I hated this.
And, First 20 minutes was good for you. I hated this.
These are my most hated types of Canberra losses. I hate it when they lose like this more than when they get pumped. Because if you get pumped, you get pumped, right? Like, if you lose by heaps, it's generally because you were much worse than the other team. And that's just part of life, and it's part of footy, and that's just what happens sometimes. I hate it when Canberra get punked. I hate it when they get beaten at their own game. How many, like, all season on this show, for all the entire time I've been doing this show, and I've come on here and I've talked about how Canberra at their best when they're tough and committed and throwing themselves around and being powerful and going goblin mode and all that sort of shit. And they just got out fought by Cronulla. Cronulla were better because they were smarter. They were always going to be smarter, but they were tougher too. And if this Canberra team can't hang their hat on their toughness, they can't hang their hat anywhere. And at 18-0, what they hadn't been playing great to get to 18-0, but at 18-0, I think they all thought the game was sewn up, and they stopped putting in those second efforts. They stopped throwing themselves around, and it was all Cronulla needed to get back into it. And I think that's a big commendation for Cronulla to sort of stay on the job down 18-0. It's very easy when you're down 18-0 to just sort of give it up for a bad go, but they kept. They stuck to their principles and stuck to what was working for them. And that was a really up-tempo style. And it sort of helped them totally dominate Canberra in the middle of the field, which is something I didn't think was going to happen. You know, they had much lighter guys, much smaller guys out there, like Cam McInnes, who was fantastic, and Jack Williams, who had the best game of his entire career. He had the most runs of any game in his career and the most meters of any game in his career. I thought he was fantastic. And they just made Canberra's middles look second rate, made them look slow, made them look not up for the battle in the same way Cronulla was, you know. And that probably gets best summed up with the Blake Brayley try. It's a bad kick from Brayley. It's a shank. It looks out like it's going out on the full. Xavier Savage, who at that point had a really good game, kind of just dawdles back, isn't really looking for Katoa. He switched off for a moment, and then Katoa's there and he throws the ball inside, and there's just 1,000 Sharks there. Because they all pushed up. They all chased on it, even though there was no real reason to.
Yeah, one got taken out by the ref and they still scored.
Yeah, yeah. And when Canberra's playing well, those are the sorts of tries they score. Like, I know it sends you crazy because you say, how can they keep doing this? It's all a fluke. It's all a fluke. It's all a fluke. If you work hard, if you don't give up on a play ever, if you chase when there's no reason to chase, good things happen.
What was interesting to me with that try in particular was about 5 minutes prior to that was when Rapana had come across on that same sideline to collect that kick and inadvertently taken the ball into touch when he slipped over. And then he was a little bit timid coming across on that next kick. And so it all kind of piles up. Yep. And it's amazing to me that the Raiders were up 18-0 with 12 minutes to go in the first half and went into the sheds with the game tied. And it's just an enormous concern because I thought this shit was behind us, Nick. I really did.
It's never all the way behind us.
Like the way
we turn around and it's always there.
The way that they sort of saw out that game against the Tigers, it wasn't that it was the Tigers. It wasn't who the opposition was. It was the fact that they didn't get into one of these spots where they get up by a couple of tries in the first half. They're playing super well and then fall apart. They didn't do that in that game. And I thought that maybe they'd learned enough lessons from all the times that happened in the past that it wasn't going to happen again. But credit to the Sharks, 18-0 down. They didn't give up. They stuck to their processes. I thought Braden Trindle was unlucky not to get any Dalian votes as well at all. I thought he was great. But I do think that you mentioned Jack Williams there and Cam McInnes, who I thought were both absolutely sensational. I saw a friend of the show, Nathan, after brother of Puddles, who won the Coltrane Cup last year.
Yeah, I know Nathan.
Saw him at one of the bars in Cronulla afterwards, and we were just like, we're going to call this the Jack Williams game from now because he was superb. And that's a guy we've been waiting for this, for a guy like Jack Williams. We've been waiting for him to have a game like this.
How many NRL games do you think he's played?
70?
He has played 103 NRL games. This is his sixth year in first grade. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Mate, he joins a fine tradition of random Sharks dudes who always play well against the Raiders. Like, so he was a Raiders junior. He's from down Coomer way.
Okay. But
unbelievably, he's not related to Sam Williams, former Raider, who is also from Coomer, but that's neither here nor there. But he debuted against him back in 2018, scored a try then, always seems to play well against them. And there's been a very strange and arcane list of Sharks guys who are like that. Matt Pryor was like that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a good play, but against Canberra, he turned into fucking Zeus. Ben Pomeroy was like that. But the undisputed champion, always, forever, is David Simmons. Dude, 16 games against the Raiders for David Simmons, 16 tries.
It's pretty good.
Unbelievable shit, you know? And Williams is now the inheritor of that legacy. Like, hopefully he can bear the mantle, you know?
Yeah. Thought Kyle Arrow was really good as well.
I was quite impressed with him for a little while,
but yeah, thought he played well. And yeah, I just, this is, you know, the Sharks, issues have been, we've talked about their fragility and their lack of mental toughness and stuff, and they're coming off a diabolical week at Leichhardt and down 18-0 in front of a sold-out Shark Park, and it would have been very easy to just roll over and lose this 30-18 or something like
that.
Then
why didn't they? If it was easy, well, why didn't they do it, Matthew?
Because they took the hardest road in this one, Nicholas. And in the end, it was like a very deserved victory for them. And what on earth do Canberra do now?
Look, it's not the sort of game where you just go crazy and drop everyone.
No.
But I loved Ricky's attitude in the presser. I
did like that.
I loved how pissed off he was. He was so pissed off that when someone tried to offer
Matt Tomoko had a good game.
tried to offer him a softball, and Ricky was just having none of it. We say every year that Canberra can take a while to find their best 17. I still don't think they're there yet. I really like Zach Hosking. Everyone likes Zach Hosking, but some of his defensive reads in the last couple of weeks, they're part of the reason that I still think Elliot Whitehead needs to start, because I don't think Hosking has it in him yet to be an 80-minute back row on the NRL. He's not an every down back yet. You know, that miss on Trindle was really quite poor, and he had a similar defensive misread for the Luke Metcalf try last week. And while there's a lot of ability in this Canberra team, and we've seen it, they have developed a really worrying habit of conceding tries in bunches. This is the third time in four games this season where the opposition has scored a try and then scored another one before Canberra's touched the ball again.
That's bad.
That's really, really bad. Mm. And while they have a lot of guys who are good for big plays, I think sometimes they lose sight of their true strength, which is an ability to apply themselves consistently physically through the 80 minutes. That's the path forward for this team. You know, when they apply themselves physically, when they're living every collision, that's what makes them a dangerous side. When they switch off, they can really switch off badly, you know? And I was really disappointed with a couple of guys. I was really disappointed with Corey Horsburgh. I know it's his first game of the season, but he's been in first grade 5 years now. And he just needs to be better than this. And he is a better player than this. I really don't know what they're doing with Josh Papali'i's minutes. He didn't get that much game time. I would like to see them make a change and have him come off the bench, because I actually think he'll end up playing more footy that way. And we've seen what a success that can be over at Parramatta, where they've done it to great effect with Junior Paolo. Hudson Young's having a pretty rough start to the year as well. And so, like, there's areas where they can improve. It was just really, really disappointing. Because, like I said at the start, I hate it when they lose, but I hate it the most when they get punked. And they got punked in this one. They got outfought by a team I didn't think could outfight them.
Yeah. That's, to me, the most shocking thing, because when you talk about the characteristics that rugby league teams have, Canberra, above most others, are known for their ability to scrap and scratch and claw their way through games like this. And the Sharks, we talked about at length their inability to overcome adversity, but it was complete opposite in this game. And I think from basically the half-hour mark, Cronulla were fantastic. They were absolutely fantastic. And just looked a world apart from what they were against the Tigers a week ago. Look, Tuku Hautapua was pretty good for them off the bench, as well as Jack Williams.
Yeah, I think THT's got a...
is not really doing a whole lot.
THT's a bench guy, so he might not take Kafusi's spot, but I think he's got to be
back.
I'm not certain. I don't have it in front of me. But
when's Royce Hunt back?
THT sort of adds a explosive element to this bench that they've really, really needed. You know, like
100%
Jack Williams, as good as he was in this one, probably not going to do that every week. But I think you can rely on THT coming on and blowing some shit up more often than not. So that's a really good thing, you know?
Yeah.
And like Cronulla, when I talked about Cronulla staying on the job, part of that is with the tempo they played with. That last try that Sione Katoa scores, go back and watch it again. By the time the ball gets out there, half the Raiders look like they need oxygen masks. They are so, so tired from chasing Cronulla around all afternoon. That stuff I talked about with Canterbury, changing the point in attack and getting at the B defender and the C defender more than the A defender, the Sharks do that really, really well. And they did it to great effect in this one. Canberra had the big main pack, but the Sharks were too quick for them.
We did say that on the preview. We said if their pack can sort of not even win the battle, but just not lose the battle too badly, then their wide guys can find some joy in this game. And that's kind of what they did. So Yep. Good on them.
I hated it. Did we talk about Kyle Iro? I think I blacked out for a second.
Yeah, we did. I said I thought he had a really good game, and he's a guy I've been waiting to see break out.
You know,
for
he's older than you think. He's 24.
24. Same age as Zach Lomax, which blew my mind.
Oh yeah, wow. I don't like that.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't like that at all. But yeah, I was quite impressed with him. Thought it was a really rugged showing from him, and it's always nice to see someone come through the Jets like that. So happy days for everyone except me.
Yeah, I am sorry about that, mate. What do you make?
You're not sorry. Come on.
Of course I am. I don't want you to be sad. What are you talking about? I can be sorry. I can feel bad for you and still like...
We said I am the supportive friend. That's me. It's my thing. Right. That's my thing, bro.
I am famously selfish and not supportive of my friends. That is what I'm known for. What did you... What are your thoughts on Hard Solo being available at Shark Park?
I like it, but it should only be available at Shark Park. That should be one of the weird Shark Park quirks that you don't get anywhere else. Like how you're getting full strength Veebs at Leichhardt, you know? So, that's the Leichhardt thing. The Shark Park thing can be Hard Solo. I'm not calling it hard rated. I refuse.
No, I also refuse. But that got me thinking, because I agree, full strength VB is the hallmark of Leichhardt Oval. What if each suburban ground had its own signature canned beverage that you couldn't get anywhere else?
Well, of course I'm going to be in favor of that. Like, that's like you're selling ice to Eskimos at this point.
What would Penrith's be? Is it Woodstock and Cola? No, it's Drink West. It's Drink West.
I was going to say KB.
It's got to be Drink West, surely.
If they're not doing a deal with Drink West and using that as a way to funnel money to Nathan Cleary outside the salary cap, like, what are we even doing?
What are we doing here?
What is going on?
Yeah, no. Yeah, a lovely touch. But the good folks at Shark Park drank them dry. They're out Hard Solo at halftime. Finished, cleaned them out.
You got to love that.
Yeah.
That is one of those things at suburban grounds that everyone finds very annoying, but I love. I love when you drink them dry, you know?
We had to make do with some Brookvale lemon, lime and bitters instead.
Maybe there's a link between me liking things that are actually bad and uncomfortable and going for the Raiders. Maybe there's some sort of psychological tie there, but I'll be damned if I'm going to try and figure it out.
Yep. And also a quick mention, Jack Whiten arrived at the game at the same time as me, and he was with Jordan Rapana's family, who were, of course, all there for Rapana's during the game. So that was nice to see Jack.
Very, very nice of him. Canberra's shithouse record in milestone games continues. I think the last time that a thing like a game like this happened was actually Croker's 300th game last year. So that's awesome.
Yeah, sorry, mate. Also, 200 felt low for Rapana. I feel like he's been around for...
Well, he was out of the league. He was out of the league for six
years. That's true. That's a great point. That's 100 games right there.
Well, I shared a story. I didn't talk about Rapana much in the lead up to this game because I talk about him nearly every week, and you guys all know how much I love him and how fond I am of him as a player and all that. But if you get the chance, go onto my Twitter. The other day, I shared a profile that a guy named Chris Wilson wrote in the Canberra Times back in 2015, just as Rapana was coming back into the league. And it sort of details Rapana's life growing up and his life after he made his debut for the Titans and had all that time out of the league. And it's just he's lived a really, really remarkable life. And the fact that he made it back to first grade, well, the fact he made it to first grade in the first place, and then the fact that he made it back again after the mission, that's already remarkable, let alone all the things he's gone on to do over the last 10 years. So even if you don't like Jordan Rapana, and I know a lot of you don't, go and read this, because it's not just a great story about a player and a person who I find really compelling. It's also one of the best sports profiles I think I've ever read, and I return to it all the time. So please go check that out if you're a fan of any of those things.
On a scale of 1 to Eagles of Behrendorf, how good is it?
It's on that same level.
Oh, wow. Okay. Maybe I should read it then.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yep. Okay. And moving on to the last game of the weekend. Parramatta 16, the West Tigers 17. I got three words for you. Benjamin Quentin Marshall.
I've got four words for you. Lachlan, life's good, Galvin.
Mate, he played the long game in this one, didn't he?
Did he ever? They don't call him short game.
They sure don't. I'm all in on the LG life's good / long game nickname for him. He's tall drink of water. Great kick for that Olam try. Fantastic link up play with Jareem Buller for the try that put them in the lead. A thrilling finish. And what an unbelievable performance from the West Tigers when you consider how much ball Parramatta had in the first half. I could not believe that this game was 6-6 at halftime. Parramatta could have been up by 20 with the amount of field position they had. But this is not the West Tigers of old.
So I was covering this game for work. I was out at the stadium, and I reckon from the 30th minute to the 40th minute, I said to myself five or six times, well, the Tigers have been up for this, but they've just made it way too hard for themselves. And Parra's going to get one, and then West are going to crack, and then it's all going to be over, and it's going to be 30 points to six. And I'm going to have to come on the show and go, oh, but they were up for it for the first 25. But But they just kept doing it. They just kept turning up, kept turning them away, kept putting pressure on defensively. Benji Marshall after the game, Api Korosau was saying after the game, that having Samuel Afainu and John Bateman out there really helped that defensive stand, because they're the kind of guys who yell and scream after a stop and really sort of give the team a lot of that energy. And when I was checking some bits on replay when I get home, and he's right, you can see it all the time. Those guys really, really, really brought it. And yeah, West just kept hanging in there. And then they were able to strike late. It's a super win. It's one of the more resilient wins that they've had in a very, very long time.
Yeah, unbelievable performance. And it's funny because I thought Aiden Cedars was kind of had a tough one out there until the very end. You thought he was a lot better than I did, but we can both agree that when it comes to field goals, there's no one I want more kicking them. Even though it looked ugly as hell coming off the boot.
He's a funny. So I've talked before about how sweetly he strikes the ball.
Mm.
But for years at the Raiders, he didn't kick a field goal. I don't think he kicked one until his third season there. And he got in a bad habit of striking balls that looked unbelievable off the boot, but then like were drawn to the post like a magnet, or would drift away at the last second. I much prefer this version where the kicks don't look good, but they go over.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but like we do disagree on how he played. I thought his kicking game was pretty good. There were a couple in the first half, especially where he really, really helped get him out of trouble. But I thought once Galvin got sin bin, Caesar really took a lot more control, and he didn't just kick the field goal. That he set up that try for Justin Olam with a run around. Oh my God, love a run around! And it's just really nice stuff. And like he just in winning this game for them with that play, he did exactly what they brought him to this club to do. You know, he's helping mentor Galvin. He's steering the team around the park. He's out there doing the majority of the kicking. And then when things get tight, he can knock a field goal over. Like that was his job description, and he's filled that role beautifully, you know. But like we're gilding the lily here. Let's talk about LG, man.
It's at this point just very difficult to keep a lid on your excitement if you're a Tigers fan. You have an 18-year-old who's your junior product, who looks like he's been playing first grade for 5 years, who is so important to their attack, who just seems to already know which levers to pull in every situation, apart from hip dropping people. But other than that, a guy who has just looks mature beyond his years, and who through the first month of the season has, with the exception of Api Korosau, been their best player, which is insane to say about an 18-year-old who up until when the team was named for round two, no one was even sure was going to be in first grade. But here he is.
What really impressed me with this game was his composure once he came back on the field. Because a lot of the time, if you're a young guy like Galvin, who's been really good in the juniors, dealing with adversity is a little bit foreign, especially when it comes to footy. You know, like he's been one of the best players on just about every team he's ever played on. He's never really had situations where footy's been that hard for him. So have something like that happen to get sin binned in a big spot, in a big high pressure game against a local rival in a big crowd and all that sort of deal. I think a lot of guys would go back into their shell, but when he came back on, it was like nothing had happened. He just got straight back on the job. That offload that he throws to Buller for the go ahead try, just really, really classy stuff. And he's combining so well with Caesar. It was sort of Caesar straightening at the line that helped create the space for Galvin. And I'm not saying I'm happy to see Blaze Talungi miss the tackle, but the idea of the former schoolboy halves partners going head to head in such a big moment, like that really captured my imagination as well. But yeah, man, long games going to be here for a long, long time, man. I really can't believe how comfortable he looks out there.
If you're one of those 100 guys that goes just for the West Magpies game and then leaves before first grade, you must be salivating at the thought of Jerome Luai playing for you next year.
Well, the biggest recruit the Magpies have had since
Ken McGuinness.
Yeah.
Sure.
Since they captured the signature of McGuinness.
I am obviously joking a little bit, but what are they going to do?
Oh, it's a good problem to have, man.
Yeah, of course it is. But it's a very interesting situation. Like, this is uncharted territory. We've never really, off the top of my head, can I think of a situation in this sport where a guy's been signed a year out and then...
Look, there's still a lot of footy left.
Oh, of course, They're
just based on the Super League track record, there is a possibility that Aiden Caesar's body doesn't last the full season. But this was always going to be Caesar's role. He was always going to be the bridge to the future, but not necessarily part of the future, you know? So that was always going to be a way. But, you know, Benji mentioned this like four or five times in his press conference. He's not worried about last year. He's not worried about next year. He said, I'm on the now train. And I think you and I and everyone else should join the now train.
I'm on the now train. Yeah. And the future is now with Lachlan Galvin. Life's good.
LG. What else from West? Justin Olam, terrific again.
Looks 5 years younger.
Really does. I've got a story coming out with him on the ABC website, probably as you're listening to this. Talks a little bit about what he went through at Melbourne last year, why he, as he says, wasn't himself at all last season. There was a knee injury that was giving him a fair bit of trouble, but he was able to sort of rest up over the summer. And yeah, he really looks like the Justin Olam of old. It's not just how he's running with the ball, although he is doing that really well. It's defensively. It's like he's didn't get anyone in one of his special shots today, but he sort of had blokes in the crosshairs a few times. And I love him being next to Galvin because it gives Galvin so much protection and so much confidence that he's got a bloke like that out there looking out for him. Stefano Uitoikamanu playing some really, really good footy at the minute, loving what he's doing in his second stint on the field. He's really helping to turn the momentum of the games. And a lock forward, Fanua Bole, I thought was really, really good. He's probably my pick for the most underrated player in the NRL right now.
I like that. Get on board with
just
that.
A real no-nonsense middle, but he's got a little bit of footwork about him too. He's been really strong in all three games for the Tigers this season. Just good stuff. It was good to see them stick to the principles that helped them do well against the Sharks. You know, this is another team that really needs to sort of raise their floor, and I think we're in the process of seeing that raising right now.
I think Benji's got them playing a lot meaner and a lot grubbier as well. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean that in a positive way. I think the way they handled a lot of those periods of the game where Parramatta were dominating field position by slowing the game down, giving away six agains, giving away penalties and all that stuff. The smart teams do it. I know it's a shit thing to say, but the smart teams do it. And the Tigers of old didn't play like that. And especially John Bateman, who we've talked about before, is a master of that kind of stuff. How on earth Liam Kennedy didn't send me one of these players in the first half is absolutely beyond me. But
yeah, I couldn't believe that. But
if they're going to let you get away with it, then get away with it.
100%.
That's an aspect of the sport that all the good teams are good at, and that's something that Benji seems to have already got his hand on. Because I remember they were so grubby against your lot in round two as well. And so, hopefully that keeps up. They only used 15 players today.
Yeah, they did. I don't mind that, though. Because,
it's working.
Well, both their back rowers are 80-minute guys, and Appy, I don't think, would usually play 80, but they wanted to keep him out there. So why make a change for the sake of it? You know,
it's true.
And it was a smart thing to. I think it was a smart thing to do because we talked about in the preview show about how Parramatta's were probably going to take a bit of an ascendancy once the Tigers starters came off, and Uitoikamanu and Clemmer are both capable of playing big minutes. Clemmer played a full game, not that many years ago in Newcastle. So limit the time when they're not on the field, you know, make the most out of your big minute dudes. It was good stuff. And I think that's a promising sign. Like, so much of what attracts me to Benji as a coach, nothing seems to faze him. Like nothing ever seems like too big a deal for him to handle. But I also think he seems to be pretty adaptable. You know, I doubt it. The plan going in was to not use two of your blokes, but he just didn't use them. Didn't feel like he needed them, you know, and he's someone who always backs his instincts, always trusts his own judgment, and has absolute belief in that judgment as well. And I don't know, it's a charismatic quality. And like, you hear him speak in these presses, and even just when you see him in the sheds around the guys, it's easy to see why people follow him. You know, it's just sort of oozes this this charisma and this confidence that's really, really infectious.
Yeah, absolutely agree. What do you think about Parramatta? I haven't talked about them all.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot to dissect from the Tigers. Parramatta, thought Brad Arthur sort of had the right of it in his presser where he said they kept trying to play around Western, not through him. But like with a lot of the footy they were had, they were sort of like poking at him. They weren't sort of like reaching in there and pulling him apart. You know, there's a lot of pre-line passing instead of like in the line passing. And you know, the Tigers' defensive pressure was really good, but some basic errors from Parramatta as well. Like Ryan Madison had three drops. I think they were all in contact.
Not great.
Wasn't securing the ball properly. And Morgan Harper had a tough time of it out there as well. Gutherson was really busy, really buzzing around a lot.
Mm.
But it was almost too hyperactive at points. They probably needed a cooler head out there. Mm. I was probably expecting a bit more from Dylan Brown in steering them around. That's a big change for him to make because that's not usually his role in the side. He was trying
a bit too much just because I think he knew that without Moses, it was a lot more was going to fall on him. Blaise Talangi was okay, but again, didn't really do a whole lot. I thought Will Pennicini was pretty good for them, but I thought their best player was Jermaine Hopgood easily.
Yeah, Hopgood was strong. That pass he throws to Gutherson for the try after he's made the break, that's really, really hard. You see a lot of blokes fuck that up all the time. But this is kind of my concern with Parramatta, and I think it's a concern that they've identified themselves. I don't think they have a problem getting up for big games against big opponents, you know? And before this game, when I was thinking about stories I might try and interview the guys about after the game, I thought, well, if Dylan Brown plays really well, I'll do a story with him about what it's going to be like for him to take over as lead playmaker when Moses is out. So I was reading a few old Dylan Brown interviews. And there was a good feature that I think Adrian Prozenko wrote in the Herald that ran in February of this year. And Brown was very, very candid about his own form. And he sort of said, I haven't always been an every week player. I think I've been pretty up and down. And I'm working really hard on being present in every moment of games. And that sort of mentality is going to come through in my application because that's something we do on this team sometimes. We get up for the big games against Penrith and then we don't get up for the other games and go, we have to play every game like we're playing against Penrith. Then Brad Arthur in his presser said a very similar thing. He goes, this is a team that we're still like, we need to understand that every game matters and every point matters. So I think that's something that it seems to be very present in this team's mind. I think they know that they can have a tendency to sort of slacken off or not play with the same sort of physicality and commitment against the bad teams as they do against the good ones, you know, and that's something that our team has really struggled with for a good couple of years now, you know, and I think it's a battle that they're sort of fighting now.
Yeah, completely agree, mate. And I think, I don't think it's the same extent as Tamalolo, but I think to start the season, Junior Bell has slowed down a little bit, but I mean, but not that he's not still a good player, but when he's such an important part of everything that they do, if he's not one of the best players in the world anymore, then
I don't know,
that's
man.
Going
I think,
to be a big
I,
problem for
dude,
them.
I thought that... before he was only okay today, but before that, he's been fabulous. Like he's been their best player, I think.
I don't know.
He wasn't good today. I will say that. But yeah, the first 3 weeks, I thought that move to the bench had really agreed with him. He was coming on and killing.
Well, maybe he needs to move back there.
Maybe he can.
Yeah, well, he started today. Didn't work. So yeah, tough one for them. Could have easily won this. And honestly, with the amount of ball they had in the first half, they should have won this. Let's be real.
100%.
It's a great story for the Tigers, but come on, boys. What are we doing? If Mitch Moses plays, they might win. But again, I fell into a trap last year with my team of saying if such and such was there, we would have won. And you don't want to start falling into that trap.
No excuses, often, 24.
No excuses, 2024. But the Tigers, they are sixth. Look at them. Look at them go. So the Dolphins next.
There you go.
I think who wins that could be first. What a time to be alive.
Oh no, wouldn't that be something? Galvin on report for that hip drop. And because hip drops are the only things that get you suspended these days. Do you reckon they'll fight the charge? I don't think they will.
I mean, it was one of the worst ones I've seen, so probably not. It was like comically late as well. So by the way, I just think Liam Kennedy's painfully out of his depth as an NRL referee. I thought he was really poor today. He allowed the Tigers to do whatever, and then he missed that hip drop. Like, I don't know how you missed that. It was so blatant. And then at the end, I'm not sure the penalty call was right on that last play. I thought Bulla was interfered with off the kickoff. But
Didn't notice the hip drop at the time, but that might be because I was looking at Kelma Tuilagi in the throwback jersey with the blue headgear on, and I thought it was David Solomona. Thought I had been transported back to the year 2001. And then I wasn't checking my phone during the game. And then when I checked it, I had text messages from two different people saying Solomon is back.
Oh, nice.
Exciting stuff.
It is. But yeah, really bad history. He'll miss a couple of weeks for that.
Yep. I think it's two if he pleads guilty and then three if he fights and loses. I think.
So not quite the rare stat of he'll be suspended for more weeks than he has first grade games. Because he's played three.
Oh,
games,
so. That would be fun though, wouldn't
remember
it?
Remember when Jack Hetherington had more? He had more minutes sent off in a season, like not on the field than on the field because of a sin bin and a send off or something. Some weird stuff like that.
I do remember that. But now if Galvin gets suspended for two games, it means he can't win Rookie of the Year.
That sucks because it's only been a month, but he'd be my prohibitive favorite right now.
He can be the People's Rookie of the Year.
Well, who are we going to pick instead?
Oh, there'll be someone. Ethan Strange is probably in with a shout.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll have a proper think about this later. But yeah. All right. We did it. Any news?
No, I think we just about covered it off. Like, there was a lot to get through from all the games. I think all the news was mainly on the field this weekend, which is nice. It's always nice when that happens.
Yeah. All right. Before we get out of here, give a quick shout out to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon service. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies. You get access to our Discord server, an extra show every single week, merchandise discounts, and plenty more. So thank you to Dave, Stu, tell Sloan I said what up. Adam Small, South's back, probably not. Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Piety, Pom Butsy, Chivakis Navalbigas, Dan Cullinane, David, Digging Coal with Danny Levi, and anonymous backer Ed Burton. I hear Mum's going out with Squeak. It's all tied up towards the end of the game. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Planet Field Goal.
Nice.
Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Justin Hodges versus Eric Groth Jr., Kick South out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Midpoint, Mads Taylor's version, Mary, Mary, full of grace, please keep Munster's groin in place. Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins, my name is Matt Bungard, and I love the great outdoors. My name is Nick Campton, rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad, never trendy. Nick Cotrick lives in my street, I'm subliminally coaching to run it straight. Sami Army, Formac 78, push it up, Manly. Reese Brown, rested by Demetrio, Rodrigo Eduardo, and the curse of the accidental head clash. Roxanne Clark, Sion Vegas, Shunta, the black vegetable, the Brisbane sniper, the most bung of Bungards, Thor, too much weights, not enough speed work. Up, up, South Sydney, the boys in the red and the green. Was and West Life Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support to everyone loyalties and everyone who listens. Thank you as well.
I do like how the Broncos legend Adam Reynolds stuck with it after the grand final and stuck with it all summer, and now he's being rewarded.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if Reynolds thanks him personally in the media in the next few days.
His faith
made all the difference.
And well done to Michael for the entourage quote of Tel Sloan. I said, what a big fan of that.
Is that where it was from? I thought he was talking about friend of the show Sloaney, but
there's no E on Sloan.
Of course.
But I will say to Brenton Sloan, what up?
Yeah,
that's what I'll
there
do
you go.
Right
we have many what ups to spare, and we'll spread them around to the people.
There you go, Sloaney, you have one. And yeah, the Planet Field Goal, great one this week.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we did it. All right, can I get out of here? Do you want 6 minutes of Nick Campton Sideshow Caravan Freak Show chat again? People liked it.
Wow. How could they not? You know, probably
I don't know.
Summoned all sorts of memories of pelting mozzarella at a small child with a beard. You know, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I will say, man, because they've now won this game, the stash stays.
Yeah.
The stash stays. It's maybe this is what the stash needed. It needed a bit of character building stuff early in its lifespan, you know? Like how some animals, after they give birth, abandon their kids to sort of see if they can hack it in the wild.
Yeah, we did it. We did it. I'm proud of us for sticking together and not body shaming me.
Are you proud of you and your moustache? Yes. When you say us, is that what you mean?
Oh, yeah, no, not you. Yeah, I meant me and my moustache. No, you've done nothing but gaslight me this whole season.
It's just you and me now, lock of hair.
Should I give it a name? Mo Fotowaker.
If you want to give it a name, you can. I can't stop you.
Cameron Mowry. So there's something there.
There's a free country, man. You can let a thousand blossoms bloom. You know,
if you want
the proclivities are your own.
If anyone's still listening, if you can come up with a South pun based name for the moustache, please send it my way. So, Fooey Fooey Mo Mo.
That's good. I was going to say Mick Moran, but
I like that.
That's not as good. That one's just for you and me.
Yeah, I mean that's for the real heads. They know. Tell you what, Nick Moran, he was no Lachie Galvin. Good player though.
Mick,
anyway.
Short game Moran.
Yeah, no long game. That was the problem. Jesus. All right. All right, everyone. We'll see you on Wednesday for the question time of your page, and if not, we'll see you on Friday. Thank you so much. Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.